Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
Exploring our oneness with spirit and each other. Unity Online Radio.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here's your host, Paul John Roach.
All right, welcome to today's show on World Spirituality. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. And today I welcome back to the show author, minister, spiritual teacher, comedian, and former BBC producer and broadcaster. My God, what a list. That's amazing, isn't it? Her name is Maggie Whitehouse. So welcome back to the show, Maggie.
Oh, it's lovely to be here again with you, Paul. Thank you so much. And Merry Christmas to you and everybody at Unity. And may it be a Christmas of rediscovering the real Christ within us.
Yes, absolutely. And that's our theme today. We're talking about birthing the Christ. Maggie comes from Great Britain, as you might have guessed from her accent, and it lives way up there on the heights of Dartmoor in southwest England in the county of Devon, beautiful part of the world. And a great place to cogitate all the coming of the light in the midst of the dark, which is part of the birthing of the Christ, I think. Anyway, we'll get into that in a moment. But one thing that's very important, isn't it, is that the birthing of the Christ doesn't just happen to Mary, right? It happens to all of us. And I'm in the middle of a 7-week series in my church on this, you know, following the journey of the birth of the Christ consciousness in Mary, but in all of us, from the announcing of it, the annunciation, through the pondering and the journey and the stable to the star and to the recognition of the truth. And it's an amazing story. But it very much is a template for all of us, right?
Absolutely. And I've studied Judaic mysticism for more than 20 years now. Sometimes it's known as Kabbalah, which means the received wisdom. It's not the system to do with Madonna or anything like that. But the ultimate teaching within it is that the whole purpose of creation is that God wishes to behold God, which means that God is experiencing manifestation through us. And the legend teaches that there is one primordial spiritual human being known as Adam Kadmon, the primordial human. And every single human being is one cell in the body of that great spiritual being, which is the being made in the image of God. And when every one of us is Christed, that divine baby will be born. What happens then, I don't know, but we're a way off it. But the whole goal of it is to say that the one thing that human beings have no free will about at all is that eventually every single one of us will be perfect. And that's a really extraordinary thing to contemplate. But Christmas every year is a chance for us to wake up to this and the incredible, actually, humility it requires to understand that you must be part of God. Isn't that extraordinary?
Absolutely. And it's the idea that, you know, that perfection that we're aiming for is already within us, isn't it? It's just, it's infolded and now it needs to be unfolded. It's involved and now it's going to evolve. But the good news is that it comes perfect and whole in each of us. You know, that's the birth of that the only begotten Son. You know, I think we mistake only begotten meaning there's only one person, but it's only begotten in the sense there's only one pushing out of the Christ into everything, and that happens perpetually. But it's only begotten because it comes perfect from the Father, if you like, from the source. And I love that idea. So it's not about Jesus only. It's about its unique quality in everything, which is kind of a conundrum, but I think it's a very beautiful idea.
It's an extraordinary idea, and I think we all have seconds when we recognize it. Perhaps for me, sitting up on the hills in Dartmoor with my dogs and seeing a rainbow over the whole of the land of Devon spread out before me, or perhaps looking up at the night sky, which is here is completely free of light pollution. I'm very blessed from that. And you just feel simultaneously so small and so utterly one with it. And the land here, this is the bones of Britain. The moorlands are bones of countries, and the deserts are bones of countries. It's places where you get pared down to the very core of your being. And again, I keep coming back again and again, and this has been my huge, huge lesson these last few years about understanding humility, the surrender. The surrender to the land, the majesticness, the tininess of me, the magnificence of me, the fact that I cannot forever resist Christ in me. Oh, yeah. Do I try?
Right. Yep. And I think that's part of this thing. You know, it's dark, and it requires humility, and we're afraid of those things. You know, we want the light, and we want to feel a lot of self-worth, especially if we're in a new thought or new age way of looking at things, is, you know, I claim my good, I'm worthy to receive. And and I don't think that to be humble means that you have to be a miserable worm, but it means that you have to conceive that the what wants to bring you your good is greater than you, you know, as an ego. So we don't have to puff our egos up to have all the good things in our lives. We have to self-empty, if you like, get rid of the concepts we have around the limited sense of who we are, so that we can take on a larger sense of what's possible. And I did a sermon this Sunday on the pondering, you know, that Mary was pondering in her heart the things that were coming to her, and the nature of Jesus and the Christ. And I quoted from St. John of the Cross, his wonderful poem, you know, about going into the darkness and becoming one with the beloved in that intimate poem. It's just an amazing poem. But with this one line, what it says, you know, my beloved, the Christ, lay on my flowering breast, and we were one. And I love that idea of flowering breast. You know, the flowering breast is the soul, isn't it, or the being that's open to receive this good news, you know, that we're open to the wonder that's all around us. And when we do that, we begin to blossom, we begin to flower in a way that we couldn't before, and we become very attractive to the Christ, if you like. The Christ wants to be with us because we're open and ready. He knocks and we open the door, and there's that embrace. And I love that idea of the, you know, the flowering breast. And that's really what Christmas is, I think, is the, you know, the flowering once again, isn't it, of this majesty in the darkness, in the you know, in the reverses of life. You know, there's no room at the inn.
That's beautifully, beautifully put. I love that. Yes, well, it's the return of the Son, isn't it? S-O-N or S-U-N or and there's no gender in it, obviously, but this is the point at which the roots are going down. Nothing is showing. It looks like it's all death and destruction, but it's carving us down to that nakedness so we can have that flowering on our chest, that baby lying with us. It's and we cover it up so much more successfully every year, don't we? Black Friday has now hit the United Kingdom.
Is that right?
the day after Thanksgiving. We don't do Thanksgiving. I think it's tremendous that the North America does Thanksgiving. I think it's probably one of the reasons why you're such a prosperous nation, because at least you sit down and give thanks once a year. But now there's all this running around, more stuff, more stuff, more stuff, and it's how the ego deals with it, and it's so in many ways it's kind of sad. But even so, you still see so many people still stop for that second of the miracle, that moment of the miracle, and it's such a shame that Christianity, certainly in the United Kingdom, is pretty unpopular now, apart from the evangelical aspects to it. But about 4 or 5% of people are going to church, and we seem to have lost the magic and the mystery. A friend of mine said that fundamentalism occurs when we lose the innate spirit. We lose the initial glory of not understanding and allowing it just to be. And that's what you're talking about, is the allowing it just to be.
Yes.
The unraveling. And every year, as we grow older, we wind ourselves in another swaddling band to sort of try and hide this vulnerability, because it feels so dangerous in the modern world sometimes, I think.
Well, I like that idea of, you know, fundamentalism being in basic antagonism to the messy mystery, if you like, you know, because fundamentalisms of whatever ilk always seem to want to have to know the truth, you know, that there's one truth and we know what it is. And of course, as you go into spirituality, you realize that you can never fully know the truth. There is that humility that comes from resting in the mystery. And the fundamentalism is basically in the head too, isn't it? Because, you know, if you think you know something, that's usually only in the head. The heart is open to the mystery. So, you know, fundamentalism tends to be a very dry thing. And yes, we rightly run away from it, I think, because we feel like it's offering, you know, answers that aren't real, you know, that don't deeply satisfy. It may satisfy some, but I don't think it satisfies the heart. You know, I grew up in Britain, of course, and it was a secular society back then. You know, people were always leaving the church, and seems like it's got even more so. And I think there's been a growth, isn't there, in sort of new thought, new age, alternative pagan traditions in Europe that have somewhat replaced the church. You know, that's true in America too, but I think we're still very much a spiritual and religious culture. You know, many people go to church still, you know, just because that's a tradition. What do you think of that? Is paganism and those traditions okay?
Well, it's an interesting, it's a very moot point, isn't it? One of my best friends in Britain runs Unity in the United Kingdom. She's the spiritual leader of Unity here. And they took out a stall at the Mind, Body, Soul exhibition quite recently. Yeah. And she found it quite disheartening how off-put people were put by the word God.
Yes.
They were fine with spirit, higher source, and they were okay with angels. They were sort of okay with the Christ consciousness. But the word God was the one that they found very threatening and frightening. And, of course, it's had so much stuff piled onto it, this idea of religion and war. And it's coming back to that fundamentalism idea. Fundamentalism is the laying down of the law. I am right, you are wrong, which is ego. And God seems to have become very associated with ego. I'm very interested in the fact that the angelology has become so popular here. And people, again, in the Jewish mysticism, there's a very, very clear structure of intercession by angelic beings, which is very powerful and to my experience is very effective, but it's a bit like the intercession of the saints, which is that you approach the Holy One to God via a strand of what's known as the Pargod, the great tapestry of life, which would be represented by an angel. And most people now are crazy about Archangel Michael. And in the Jewish tradition, the energy of Archangel Michael is exactly the same resonance as the Christ consciousness.
Hmm.
And that's what really interests me, is that the calling is still to the Christ consciousness. They're calling it by a different name. Now, does that matter? Probably not, but we do get, if we focus on an angel or an aspect of God, I think we still lose some of that magic and mystery. But I would rather people sought in some way than in no way. And of course, Jewish folk sometimes feel that Christianity is a pagan religion anyway, because we've put the image of Jesus before God. And the New Testament, apart from in one place, does not say Jesus Christ is God. It says Jesus Christ is Lord. It's only Thomas, when he puts his finger in Jesus' wounds, that says, "My Lord and my God, ho Kurios, ho Theos." Everywhere else, it's Jesus Christ is Lord. And in the mystical tradition, the word Lord or Adonai means gateway or doorway. So the idea is that whatever we choose to personify to help us see God needs to be the gateway, not the block.
Yes.
Needs to be the opening, the window, rather than the "this is the only way it can be done." So any way that people want to seek spirit, I think, is potentially healthy. But I do think it's a shame that we've lost that engagement in mystery.
Yes, very good. You know, talking about Michael, Saint Michael, and there's many churches, I think, throughout Europe, particularly, and certainly in Britain. You know, it's traditional, I think, that this Michael Church is set on a hill, and often they're linked to ley lines, and if you believe in that, you know, sort of power grids that go from one place to another, and you see them going through Stonehenge and through hills, and I think there's an old Michael Church on Glastonbury Tor, for instance, that only the tower remains, but. Of course, Michael is famous for, you know, overcoming the negative in the form of the worm or the snake or the dragon or whatever. So, you know, he's a warrior image, isn't he? And I like to think of him like Lord Subramaniam in Hinduism, you know, who's the similar warrior god. Lord Subramaniam or Kartikeya is the second son of Shiva, and he has the army of the righteous, and they overcome evil, and he also has a veil. It's a spear, a lance, and there's a lot of correlations there between those entities. But I think, you know, we want an image that is strong and righteous, I think, and I think people are attracted to that image of a god who overcomes difficulty in that regard. And I also think a lot of people are open to this idea of the divine feminine as a very strong force too. You know, the black Madonnas and things like that. That seems to be another image that people resonate with in many regards.
Yes, and of course, in Catholicism, we still have the Mary figure very very pronounced, very profound, whereas in Anglicanism and probably the Episcopal churches, that's sort of not so present. We actually live half a mile, not even half a mile, from the crossing of a Michael and Mary ley line. I don't really know what the huge significance of it is, but certainly living here has been fairly transformational for me.
Yeah, and interesting.
This sacred magic, sacred marriage, magic and marriage of the masculine and the feminine. And there is no Christ story without Mary, and there is no Christ without the story of the purity of Mary, whether you believe she's a virgin or not, and whether the story happened or not. But it is this idea of the fruiting of innocence, this opening of the very basis of wholeness, that is the innocence and the incarnation, the part of us that is born again and again and again and gets a new chance every second, a new birth every second.
I love that. You know, it's like the John Lennon song, you know, "I'm in love for the first time," even though he'd been married for 10 years, you know, he was in love for the first time again, because it was all new again with Yoko in that case. But, and I think this is true, you know, we can reestablish, renew, be reborn, right? And that's what born again Christian is about, except it's not one time, is it? It's about being born again and again and again, over and over, I think. Every day's a new day.
Yeah, there's an American cancer surgeon called Bernie Siegel who says that there would be no war if humanity lost its memory every midnight, which is entirely true.
That's
because
true.
If being born again actually means to rethink, to start again, and I love the fact that the word repent, metanoia, just it doesn't mean be sorry and go down your knees and say you're a miserable worm. It means think again,
yes.
Remember, put it back together again differently, look at it a different way. It's a very big, big challenge to do that. But if we can be reborn and think, well, how can I think this over in a different way? How can I reframe this, remember it so that it's healthy? And quite often you see people going, when they go through tragedies in their lives and difficulties, they find this much easier because they come to the understanding that, I think as Deepak Chopra said, God never says he needs you to let go of the pain. It's letting go of the suffering,
uh-huh.
which is about the repetitive cycle of the pain, of not accepting what is happening, the opening up of the heart. And when you open up heart and soul, it cracks. You know, a heartbreak is a heartbreak, and there is always going to be some kind of residual pain in letting go of preconceived conceptions.
And that's okay.
And that's okay. It's hard to perceive that it's okay. And I sometimes have an interesting time going through the nativity story with all the preconceptions that we put on it. It's a beautiful story, but most of it's absolute fiction, even if, you know, we don't know. There's only a few lines from Luke, but if you would like to talk to that about that, you can look at that story and pare it down to the basics and see what a beautiful, simple prosperity story it is. It's not a story of lack and misery and unhappiness. It's actually quite extraordinary. If we think again,
yes.
If we look again.
I love it. Well, let's talk about that when we come back from our break. I think we're about ready to break. Listen to these messages from Unity, and I'll be back with Maggie Whitehouse to talk about birthing the Christ and how that's a joy and an abundant good. Join us in a couple of minutes.
Unity Online Radio brings you inspiring programs on a variety of spiritual topics. Giving to the network is now easier than ever. Simply text Unity Radio to 72727 from your smartphone. You can make a one-time or recurring donation. Your gifts help us offer enriching spiritual programs that reach listeners around the world. Text Unity Radio to 72727. Thank you for your support.
Looking for the spiritual in your everyday life? Searching for meaning in the meaningless? Check out the book, Rants to Revelations, by Reverend Ogun Holder. Using his characteristic wit, humor, and storytelling, Reverend Ogun brings spiritual insight into practically every arena of human life. From issues of spiritual growth and family life to deep theological concerns about God and reality, he combines personal narrative with philosophical and scientific understanding to bring a fresh perspective into the life of faith in today's postmodern world. Pick up a copy of Rants to Revelations today from www.rantstorevs.com.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find my God.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
All right, welcome back to today's show. We're cranking up to Christmas here. This is a live show going out in the middle of the second week of Advent. I'm with Maggie Whitehouse. She's coming to us from Dartmoor, in the misty moors of southern England, of course made famous by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and the Hound of the Baskervilles. And we're talking about the birthing of the Christ and what that means for all of us. We'll talk about the story of Mary and Luke in a moment, but I want to quote from Meister Eckhart, my favorite mystic of all time. And there's a new book out, by the way, by Matthew Fox, the great Matthew Fox, called Meister Eckhart, A Mystic Warrior for Our Times. He's going to be on my show in the new year.
Wow.
But I love the book. It's an excellent book. And like I say, I love Meister Eckhart. He's to a Buddhist, he sounds Buddhist. To a Hindu, he sounds Hindu. To a Sufi, he's Sufi. And to a mystical Christian, he just hits the spot. But there's a lovely quote I want to use because we're talking about birthing the Christ. It says, this is Meister Eckhart speaking, "The maternity bed is in the Godhead. God lies like a woman on a maternity bed who has given birth in every good soul that has learned to let go and is initiated." And I just love that. The God lies like a woman on a maternity bed. But it's interesting, isn't it? Given birth in every good soul, so not just in Mary, but in us, and that innocent soul that we talked about earlier too is a good soul. It remembers its natural goodness. That has learned to let go. There's that releasing again into the mystery, and is initiated. Initiation means to begin again. It's a bit like metanoia, isn't it? When we're initiated, we're at the beginning of something. And I love that we're initiated into the newness of possibility once more.
That's lovely. Yes, and I'm beginning to learn slowly and steadily that every day I know nothing. I know nothing, and I'm spouting words here and having fun talking with you. But initiation is to know nothing. I just am open to it. What is it today? What the word manna, you know, manna from heaven. Manna means, what is it?
Right.
So we saw this manna floating down, and they went, what?
What on earth is it? Yeah, but there we go. Beautiful, isn't it?
The first two words of Genesis are Bereshit Elohim, in the beginning the Elohim. And Elohim is a feminine noun with a masculine plural ending. So the immediate implication is that the feminine is impregnated by spirit, the masculine, to give birth to this whole creative process. So it must be feminine. And I believe that before Christianity became the official religion of Rome, which of course was a culture of conquering and war, Jesus was much more an anthropomorphic figure. This idea of embracing the masculine and the feminine together.
No, an androgynous,
that's the word, yes. Yeah. I got the word. Absolutely androgynous. And again, we clamp down this image of him. We've still got, I've got some lovely pictures from a book I was given as a little girl, and I've got a couple of them framed. But he's definitely got the sort of fair, mousy hair and the Caucasian image, and the little girl with him is blonde and all that. And, of course, it wasn't like that at all. Not at all. We put our own image and our own stamp on this story. And if that works, fantastic. But if it makes it a graven image, then we lose that mystery.
Right.
And I just love this concept of how we drape so much on the story. And I think it's important to understand that Jesus was not perhaps your Simon Cowell, but if
well, let's hope not. Yeah.
Well, I wrote a book once called The Miracle Man, which was taking every single story in the Gospels, every single miracle in pure chronological order, and I placed it around a guy who was a judge on America's Got Talent, because I thought, what would happen if all these miracles happened with the whole world watching and the whole world was changed by them? That there was a person who was transformed and initiated on live TV and became Christed, and how would the world change? And I'm very proud of it as a book. It reads very well. It's got some good reviews, and it's out there on Amazon if you want to have a look at it. But it basically tells of how the world would be changed just for a little while before we started covering up again. And how I'm not into conspiracy theories, but how, of course, if we created a world where Medicare wasn't needed, or drugs, or cigarettes, or consumerism, the whole economy would crash, which would be a disaster for governments.
There we go, absolutely.
So it's a big thing, unraveling. But unraveling is where the heart of the mystery is, definitely.
Well, like you said before, it gets covered up again. I think that's one of the things that hampers so much, isn't it, is complacency. You know, it's not believing. We may believe, but it's just the complacency. I remember seeing a cartoon one time of two New Yorkers at the sunrise, and there's these two suns that are rising, you know, beyond the skyscrapers, and one New Yorker says, "Hey, look at that, two suns," and the other one turns to him and said, "Yeah, whatever." And I think this sums up humanity, really. You know, two suns could arise, and it's like, yeah, whatever. You know,
whatever.
I still got my life to live. So
whatever. Have I got the box set of Breaking Bad yet?
Yeah, you know. So it's
it's
a tough one. You know, I just to complete that thought, didn't mean to interrupt. You know, it's telling people on Sunday, you know, I've consciously been on the spiritual path now 40 years, you know. And of course, 40 is a good symbolic time, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
For about time something happened. I'm not saying it hasn't happened, but, you know, it's amazing how you can be, you know, talking and espousing these things. And I've had many breakthroughs and many moments, and I'm sure I'm much more mature spiritually than I was 40 years ago, hope to God anyway. But it's still, you know, amazing how much, you know, the ordinary everyday crowds in upon us, and we forget to live at that level. And maybe we can't, you know, that would be just too intense. And maybe we're not called to do that. We're just called to be mindfully aware of everything that we're doing, however ordinary and banal it might seem to be.
Absolutely. Transforming the ordinary and banal is the job. And I certainly struggle at that, but it's worth doing. It really is. And if we look at the story of Luke,
yeah,
it's such
a
short story. And I've got it in front of me. It's from the King James. And it just simply says, "Joseph also went up from Galilee out of the city of Nazareth into Judea unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was the house and lineage of David, to be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn." And we have put so much story on that. There's no donkey, there's no ox, there's no trailing round Bethlehem being turned away. There's no unkind innkeepers. There's not the slightest hint that Mary's in labor and desperate to find anywhere. The only thing that possibly could imply any lack of prosperity on behalf of the Holy Family is there was no room for them in the inn. And oddly enough, if you look at that, if you don't mind my going into it, it's just for interest's sake. It's not to take the magic from the story. The word for inn is kataluma. And elsewhere in Luke, where he talks about an actual inn where people stay, is Pantycheon. That's where the Good Samaritan stays. A kataluma is an upper room, quite often in a private house, sometimes in a dwelling house. But in those days, when you were going somewhere for a pilgrimage, you were going to Jerusalem or perhaps to be taxed, the men and women were segregated, you know. They didn't stay. They didn't have one-on-one rooms the way we do in motels and hotels. They had dormitories. So in the normal way, Mary would have been in a room for the women and Joseph would have been in the room for the men. And never the twain would have met during the birthing of this baby. And certainly no shepherds would have been allowed in. So what actually happened, probably because of the laws of purity, if a woman was about to give birth, all the other women around her would have been made ritually impure by the body fluids. Any body fluids, even if you cut your finger, was seen to be impure. And it was very sensible in those days when they didn't have antibiotics and vaccines and hot running water all the time. So as soon as a woman was in labor in any kind of public house whatsoever, it appears from the social history of the time that she would immediately be taken down to the kitchen area, which was, and the stable was right next to the kitchen. I've seen this in some European villages, that the animals are kept right next to the kitchen for the warmth, and also because the straw and the dung is used for fuel. So suddenly, instead of being isolated with the women, Mary is with her husband in a place where people have accepted that there is impurity because of the dirt and the stuff around the animals. And it's also where the fire would have been for the hot water and where the straw would be. And the manger was not, you know, a rickety wooden thing. It was a stone. It was a stone trough. So it was the most perfect, safe place to put a baby, out of the way of any kind of harm. So you actually see this strange story unfolding of this was exactly what was perfect and right, so that a holy baby is being born in a place where visitors could come instead of being shut away upstairs where it would have been all very secret and unknown. No, I'm just telling the story a different way, but I love that idea of it being made open and accessible in a way that was all about prosperity. There was no room in the inn because there was no place in that room for a woman who was giving birth. It wasn't that there was no space for a couple. It was exactly right. Are you getting where I'm coming from?
Absolutely.
It's just a lovely way of saying, we look at it as being wrong, but actually I think that was incredibly right. I think that was a very beautiful way of allowing a husband and wife to engage in this miracle of this holy birth. And to invite other people to share with it as well. I think that's just lovely.
Well, and you're right. Whoops, I'm getting an echo here. I hope I'm only here at my end.
It's fine. Then.
Oh, it's fine from where you are. Okay, mm-hmm. Good. What I'm hearing from this, too, is that we create our own stories around the events of the birth. For instance, two Gospels don't even mention the birth, do they? They jump straight into the adult Jesus, and only Luke really goes into such detail. The angel comes to Mary only in Luke, comes to Joseph in Matthew, for instance. Yep. So, you know, it's certainly not Gospel if it's only in one of them, you know. If it was that important, there would be in all four, presumably. So we get to make up the story a bit, you know, and it can be more relevant, I think, if we reframe it as you have just done, because there's this idea that they were poverty stricken and hard done by, and really that's not really what the Bible is trying to say. I think it's speaking to a greater mystery and intimacy, and that's what I get from the birth in the space with the animals, you know, and the manger and everything. It was very dark, intimate, warm and fuzzy, if you like. It's a beautiful place of you know, fruitfulness and down to earth, you know, literally, because they weren't in the upper room. They were down to earth, and I think all that speaks to what I love about the story. You know, it's happening in the very ordinary, messy details of my life, you know, where all the things are happening, where the animals are, all my impulses, all my all the richness of my life, you know, is there, and the wise men are there, and the shepherds are there. You know, every aspect of living is there, isn't it? It's right at the center of things.
It is. Matthew is the masculine gospel. It's the historical Judaic gospel. That's the one, as you say, the angel speaks to Joseph. That's the one where the magi, astrologer, priest is the best translation for that, who have interpreted the stars to know that this king is coming. And they're the ones that bring gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And I always wonder what the Holy Family must have done with those if they grew up so poor. Perhaps they sort of splurged it all in Egypt or something. But Luke is definitely the gospel of the women. There's 19 stories of women in Luke, and there's only 4 or 5 in Matthew, Mark, and John. Luke is the story of Elizabeth. It's the story of the women who ministered unto Jesus of their substance, and that includes Mary Magdalene. It's the story of Mary and the angel and pondering things in their heart. It's the story of Anna. It really is the gospel that engages with the family, engages with the everyday us. And I think nearly everybody does love Luke best because of that. It's also the gospel that deals with prosperity and money. And it's the one that always comes back to, if it is and we make peace with it, then it's good.
Yeah. And it's the gospel of fear not, you know. It's your father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. I mean, you get that a lot in there. It's, again, it's about the real issues that we're dealing with, and the message is it's all going to be okay. You know, there's not the theology of John or the need to convince the Jews of Matthew. There's just that openness to all humanity, and I think it's the most expansive of the Gospels, and probably the most poetic as well, I think, in terms of its language. So it does inspire, again, at that deeper level. This is fantastic stuff. We're going to need a few more hours here at least, I think. So, Jeff, put some other shows on hold, can you, so that we can continue for a few more hours. I don't think we can do that, unfortunately. I'm with Maggie Whitehouse. She's coming to us all the way from Britain to talk about the birthing of the Christ, and very apropos, of course, around this time of year. But it's apropos at any time, folks, because the Christ is being born at all times, in all places, in all people. As we take a break, let's listen to these messages from Unity, and then we'll come back and talk some more. And if you like this show and other shows, consider clicking the donate button. Keep this voice of an awakening world on the air. It goes out to 120 countries worldwide. It's making a difference. So thanks for listening. Come back in a few minutes.
Now available, YouPray, the free prayer app from Silent Unity. For more than a century, people from all over the world and all walks of life have turned to Silent Unity. With YouPray, our confidential prayer support is easy and convenient to access. With YouPray, you can send your prayer directly to Silent Unity. YouPray also includes affirmations you can share with family and friends, plus audio meditations for your prayer time. For more about the free YouPray app and links to download, visit silentunity.org/app. That's silentunity.org/app.
If I were brave, I'd walk the razor's edge where fools and dreamers dare to tread and never lose.
How is life working for you? Would it be okay with you if life got easier, simpler, yet more meaningful and vibrant? Join certified life coach Carla McClellan Tuesday afternoons for Vibrant Living. Each week, Coach Carla and her guests will share strategies and solutions designed to make your life more vibrant. Is there something in your life you'd like help with? A dream you'd like to achieve? A relationship you'd like to improve? Call into the show toll-free for Coaching with Carla. That's Vibrant Living, Life Coaching with Carla, Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Central on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
What if we're all meant to do what we secretly dream?
Now back to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Now back to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
All right, welcome back to today's show. Yes, you're back with me. You're also back with Maggie Whitehouse. We've been discussing the birthing of the Christ and how miraculous and wondrous that is. And some of the commonalities here are the idea of self-emptying, getting rid of what we think we know so that we can embrace and be that flowering breast we referenced earlier, and in the darkness, it all happens in dark, but it's the darkness where, you know, life is darkness, really. We don't know what's going to happen in the next 5 minutes. We're moving into degrees of ignorance, but we trust, and it's that openness to trust the process of our lives and the rightness of things. You mentioned earlier, Maggie, about, you know, you're nothing. You know, the more you know, the more you know you're nothing. And, of course, Socrates said that, didn't he? That's because he was the wisest man in Athens, because he knew nothing. But yes. I love the quote from Kalu Rinpoche, one of my favorite Tibetan masters. And he said a very similar thing. He said, we live in illusion and the appearance of things, but there is a reality. We are that reality. When you understand this, you see that you are nothing. And being nothing, you are everything. That's all. Yeah. And I love that, you know, being nothing, you are everything. And that's so true, isn't it? When you get rid of this false identification, then you become all automatically part of the whole. In fact, you are the whole. And there's an amazing freedom, I think, that comes from that. And this is what the Christ is about, isn't it? This is what the message of Jesus is about. You can have that abundant life. You are one with the Father, Mother essence, if you like, as he said.
Yeah, absolutely. It's apparently, I did some research because I was doing this comedy gig at the Edinburgh Festival all August. I was doing spiritual comedy an hour a night, which was really opening up for me and for a lot of other people. But one of the things I was talking about was Gabriel and the angels and this idea of fear not and how we do fear. And apparently, fear not is the most common phrase in the whole of the Bible.
Yes.
It's said more than 300 times, don't be afraid. And really, perhaps, as soon as somebody says, don't be afraid, you know it's time to hide under the bed, don't you?
Yeah, that's right.
So we need to kind of reframe it to it's actually okay. And this acceptance of things. There's a little while ago, I had problems with the lung and had some breathing problems, and I needed to have the lung respirated. And I was in hospital and on oxygen, and it was a time of great coming to terms with my physical frailty at that point. And the professor who came to see me said, well, we can get this operation done. It's a perfectly simple operation. It's going to sort the problem, but we can't have it done till Friday. And this was Wednesday morning because we don't have any spaces. And I was going very quickly into angst and fear because I wasn't able to sleep. I was very tired and very afraid. And then I just sat there for a moment and thought, well, I can't meditate because I can't breathe deeply. And then I remembered Eckhart Tolle, who, of course, is this amazing, extraordinary teacher of the present moment. And I thought, Eckhart teaches you to meditate for less than a minute. And all I have to do is let go for less than a minute whenever I can. It's not about doing 20 minutes of, you know, deep breathing and meditating. It's actually about saying, where can I find the peace in this exact moment? Just for 10 seconds. And I think we overstretch ourselves, you know, trying too hard with so much of this. So I did that. I did this just 10 seconds. And suddenly, having not been able to lie down because my lung was compromised, I got this urging, lie down. And I thought, but I can't. And I thought, well, I'll give it a go. And I laid down, and I was able to breathe.
Wow.
Which was this extraordinary miracle. And as I lay there wondering, because this had not been possible for 48 hours, and nothing physically had changed, and I got the curtains around my bed drawn because the professor had recently been. And the curtains opened and a surgeon walked in. And he was this most beautiful, magnificent man, probably 40s, 50s. And he looked at me with such love. And I sat up and looked at him and he said, hello, I'm one of the surgeons. I've come to tell you we have a cancellation.
Yeah.
And we can do the operation in half an hour's time. Would you like
it? Wow.
Wow. And it was just from letting go for 20 seconds. And it's just that complete reassertion of grace. Because I do believe in positive thinking. I do believe that our thoughts create our reality. But I was in such a state at that point that I had completely got out of the possibility of creating a good reality through my willpower.
Yeah.
That was not there. But it was just this complete reassertion of grace. And grace is the feminine. Grace is the Holy Spirit. Grace is the letting go and the immediate filling with the rightness and the perfection of that situation. And I don't think I've had many experiences of grace and many experiences of miracles, but I've never had anything quite so purely gentle and loving evidence of the fact that not only is there Christ within us, but there is the nurturing God without us as well, that aspect that will care for us. And I don't think I'm ever going to forget that as long as I live.
Yeah, that's a wonderful example, isn't it? And thanks for sharing it today, because that's inspiration for all of us who are, you know, dealing with adverse circumstances where you do feel overwhelmed. And so often, you know, I've found in my life experience that all you have to do is nothing. And that can be very creative, because we're always trying to fix something, change it, make it happen. Like you said, I got to meditate the right way. I've got to be positive. Sometimes all you have to do is just stop. And do nothing and allow, you know, and there's a tremendous energy that comes to that, because you've opened yourself to something greater, and far from doing nothing, in actuality, you've done a great deal by simply doing nothing, if you see what I mean, because it's allowing a greater energy to flood our being, isn't it? And that's a wondrous thing. You know, in Mary's pondering, you know, that's the thing, what she came to is, you know, I'm nothing, but I'm everything, because the Christ is going to be born in me. And this is true for all of us. You know, I'm nothing, but I'm everything. Oh, my goodness. How amazing is that? You know, the light has come. As we said earlier, you know, there's all these festivals of light, celebrating light in the midst of the darkness, isn't it? And, you know, Christmas is a festival of light, and there's all the Diwali of Hinduism and the Jewish festivals. You know, the pagan festivals, the winter festivals, the solstice, and and etc. So yeah, Samhain, etc. So you know, everything celebrates that, I think.
It does, and it's almost like the legend of the phoenix, in that the phoenix has to sort of burn away into nothing to produce the new egg.
Yes.
And
there we go.
Yeah, it's perhaps all the excesses of Christmas and the busyness are just to give us that one second in the afternoon, on Christmas afternoon, when the boredom hits, and then maybe you've got a chance of going into yourself just for that nanosecond, for what it's all about, and the understanding that everything is nothing and nothing is everything, and that the poorest child in Nicaragua is as rich as you, as long as they have that moment of acceptance, of allowing, as you say. And we pile up this stuff. I mean, that may be a terrible thing to say, because we think about people who live in difficult parts of the world as suffering, but I think in many ways they have much simpler lives than we do.
Well, I read an article about the happiest countries in the world, and many of them were in Central America. You know, Costa Rica was at the top, but I think Honduras and Nicaragua and Venezuela were in the top 10 of happy people. And America, of course, was down in 120 or something. And I think Britain made it to the number 40. So they weren't doing too bad. But you know, some of the places we consider to be, you know, poverty stricken, and yet the folks are happier than we are with all our supposed wealth. Let me tell you about next week's show. Then I'm going to ask, Maggie, to give us one insight for 1 second that we can take with us into our week. And I'm not asking for too much here, but all right, next week my wife Wendy joins me once again, and we're going to review the past year, what we've learned, what we're considering looking forward to for the new year, and we invite you to consider the same. What have you learned this year? How meaningful has it been? Are you ready for the next year? This has been a terrible year. I want to get it over. Surely not. There's something that's been good, even in the midst of difficulty. So that'll be our examination next week. Right now, what would you tell us in just a second or so, Maggie?
I'd sort of try and paraphrase a quotation from the wonderful mystic Hafiz. One of his favorite things, which I have as my signature on my email, is, "It's a terrible injustice for any religion to make anyone fear God." So I think that the message would be is this idea of dropping any God or any religion that makes you feel unworthy or causes you to have any fear, and to look always for the evidence of the Great Mother, of the not your family mother or even your grandmother, but this nurturing essence that desires to hold you.
Yes.
And birth you.
Beautiful. Yeah, well, that's a good way to end our show. Folks, thanks for listening today. This has been an awesome show. It'll be up on archives by the end of the day if you want to get it or send it on. So thanks for listening, as always, to World Spirituality. And Maggie, thank you so much. Once again, for being with me. It's been a joy.
It's a privilege to talk with you, Paul. It's lovely. Thank you so much, and Merry Christmas to everybody.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to everyone. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world, and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on Unity FM, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Music speaks louder than words. Music Speaks Louder Than Words is an inspiring, informative, and fun hour of uplifting, heartfelt music and commentary that delivers a powerful message of love, joy, and oneness. It will keep you smiling and singing along. Your hosts, Reverends Dale Worley and Christy Snow, are alive with the Spirit of God and singing their love to you each Thursday afternoon at 3 p.m. Central Time with Music Speaks Louder Than Words. Music, it's the only thing that the whole world listens to.
Music speaks louder than words when you sing.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.